Haken, we are continuing and possibly finishing Chapter 13 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. So Harry had just finished the detention, the first detention. He had not had time to practice vanishing spells, had not written a single dream in his dream diary, and had not finished the drawing of the bow truckle, nor had he written his essays. He skipped breakfast the next morning to scribble down a couple made-up dreams for divination, their first lesson, and was surprised to find a disheveled Ron keeping him company. "How come you didn't do it last night?" Harry asked, as Ron stared wildly around the common room for inspiration. Ron, who had been fast asleep when Harry got back to the dormitory, muttered something about doing other stuff, bent low over his parchment, and scrawled a few words. "That'll have to do," he said, slamming the diary shut. "I've said I dreamed I was buying a new pair of shoes. She can't make anything weird out of that, can she?" They hurried off to the North Tower together. "How was detention with Umbridge, anyway? What did she make you do?" Harry hesitated for a fraction of a second and then said, "Lines." "That's not so bad, eh, then?" said Ron. "Nope," said Harry. "Hey, I forgot. Did she let you off for Friday?" "No," said Harry. Ron groaned sympathetically. It was another bad day for Harry. He was one of the worst in Transfiguration, not having practiced vanishing spells at all. He had to give up his lunch hour to complete the picture of the bow truckle. And meanwhile, Professors McGonagall, Grubblyplank, and Sinistra had given them yet more homework, which he had no prospect of finishing that evening because of his second detention with Umbridge. To cap it all, Angelina Johnson tracked him down at dinner again, and on learning that he would not be able to attend Friday's Keeper tryouts, told him she was not at all impressed by his attitude, and that she expected players who wished to remain on the team to put training before their other commitments. "I'm in detention," Harry yelled after her, as she stalked away. "Do you think I'd rather be stuck in a room with that old toad or playing Quidditch?" "At least it's only lines," said Hermione consolingly, as Harry sank back onto his bench and looked down at his kidney and steak pie, which he no longer fancied very much. "It's not as if it's a dreadful punishment, really." Harry opened his mouth, closed it again, and nodded. He was not really sure why he was not telling Ron and Hermione exactly what was happening in Umbridge's room. He only knew that he did not want to see their looks of horror. That would make the whole thing seem worse, and therefore more difficult to face. He also felt dimly that this was between himself and Umbridge, a private battle of wills, and he was not going to give her the satisfaction of hearing that he had complained about it. "I can't believe how much homework we've got," said Ron miserably. "Why didn't you do any last night?" Hermione asked him. "Where were you, anyhow?" I fancied a walk," said Ron shiftily. Harry had the distinct impression he was not alone in concealing things at that moment. I don't remember at all what Ron was doing. I guess we'll find out soon. Oh, is he practicing? Maybe he's practicing. Anyways. The second detention was just as bad as the previous one. The skin on the back of Harry's hand became more irritated more quickly now, red and inflamed. Harry thought it unlikely to keep healing as effectively for long. Soon the cut would remain etched in his hand, and Umbridge, perhaps, would be satisfied. He let no moan of pain escape him, however, and from the moment of entering the room to the moment of his dismissal, again past midnight, he said nothing but good evening and good night. His homework situation, however, was now desperate, and when he returned to the Gryffindor common room, he did not, though exhausted, go to bed, but opened his books and began Snape's Moonstone essay. It was 2:30 by the time he had finished it. He knew he had done a poor job, but there was no help for it. Unless he had something to give in, he would be in detention with Snape next. He then dashed off answers to the questions Professor McGonagall had set them, cobbled together something on the proper handling of bow truckles for Professor Grubblyplank, and staggered up to bed, where he fell fully clothed on top of his bed covers and fell asleep immediately. Thursday passed in a haze of tiredness. Ron seemed very sleepy too, though Harry could not see why he should be. Harry's third detention passed in the same way as the previous two, except for after 2 hours, the words, "I must not tell lies," did not fade from the back of Harry's hand, but remained there, oozing droplets of blood. The pause and the pointed quill scratching made Professor Umbridge look up. "Ah," she said softly, moving around her desk to examine his hand herself. "Good. That ought to serve as a reminder to you, oughtn't it? You may leave for tonight." "Do I still have to come back for tomorrow?" Harry asked, picking up his school bag with his left hand rather than his smarting right. "Oh, yes," said Professor Umbridge, smiling widely as before. "Yes, I think we can etch the message a little deeper with another evening's work." He had never before considered the possibility there might be another teacher in the world he hated more than Snape. But as he walked back to Gryffindor Tower, he had to admit he found a contender. You know, Snape, for all the things he's done to Harry, the worst he's done has been snarky and taken off points and given him detentions and stuff. He's never done anything mean like this, you know? Like, anything cruel, rather. It's very strange. Like, the fact that he even is putting them on the same level is bizarre. She's evil, he thought, as he climbed a staircase to the seventh floor. She's an evil, twisted, mad old... Ron? He had reached the top of the stairs, turned right, and almost walked into Ron, who was lurking behind a statue of Lackland the Lanky, clutching his broomstick. He gave a great leap of surprise when he saw Harry, and attempted to hide his new Queen Sweep 11 behind his back. What are you doing? Nothing. What are you doing? Harry frowned at him. Come on, you can tell me. What are you hiding here for? I'm hiding from Fred and George, if you must know, said Ron. They just went past with a bunch of first years. I bet they're testing stuff on them again. I mean, they can't do it in the common room now, can they? Not with Hermione there. He was talking in a very fast, feverish way. What have you got your broom for? You haven't been flying, have you? Harry asked. Okay, I'll tell you, but don't laugh, all right? Ron said, defensively, turning redder with every second. I thought I'd try out for Gryffindor Keeper now that I've got a decent broom. There, go ahead and laugh. I'm not laughing, Harry said. Ron blinked. It's a brilliant idea. It'd be really cool if you got on the team. I've never seen you play Keeper. Are you good? I'm not bad, said Ron, who looked immensely relieved at Harry's reaction. Charlie, Fred, and George always made me keep for them when they were training during the holidays. So you've been practicing tonight? Every evening since Tuesday, just on my own, though. I'm trying to bewitch Quaffles to fly at me, but it hasn't been easy, and I don't know how much use it'll be. Ron looked nervous and anxious. Fred and George are going to laugh themselves stupid when I turn up for tryouts. They haven't stopped taking the Mickey out of me since I made prefect. I wish I was going to be there, Harry said bitterly, and they set off together for the common room. Yeah, so do I. Harry, what's that on the back of your hand? Harry, who had just scratched his nose with his free right hand, tried to hide it, but had as much success as Ron with his clean sweep. It's just a cut. It's nothing. But Ron had grabbed Harry's forearm and pulled the back of Harry's hand level up with his eyes. There was a pause, during which he stared at the words carved into his skin, and then released Harry, looking sick. I thought you said she was giving you lines. Harry hesitated, but after all, Ron had been honest with him, so he told Ron the truth about the hours he'd been spending in Umbridge's office. The hag, Ron said in a revolted whisper as they came to a halt in front of the fat lady, who was dozing peacefully with her head against her frame. She's sick. Go to McGonagall. Say something. No, said Harry at once. I'm not giving her the satisfaction of knowing she's got to me. Got to you? You can't let her get away with this. I don't know how much power McGonagall's got over her, said Harry. Dumbledore, then. Tell Dumbledore. No, said Harry flatly. Why not? He's got enough on his mind, said Harry, but that was not the reason. He was not going to Dumbledore for help when Dumbledore had not spoken to him once since last June. Well, I reckon you should, said Ron, but he was interrupted by the fat lady, who had been watching them sleepily and now burst out. Are you going to give me the password, or I have to stay awake all night waiting for you to finish your conversation? Friday dawned sullen and sodden as the rest of the week. Though Harry glanced at the staff table automatically when he entered the Great Hall, it was without real hope of seeing Hagrid, and his mind turned immediately to his more pressing problems, such as the mountainous pile of homework he had to do, and the prospect of yet another detention with Umbridge. Two things sustained Harry that day. One was the thought that it was almost the weekend, and the other, that, dreadful though his final detention with Umbridge was sure to be, he had a distant view of the Quidditch patch from her window, and might, with luck, be able to see some of Ron's tryout. These were rather feeble rays of light, it was true, but Harry was grateful for anything that might lighten his present darkness. He had never had a worse first week of term at Hogwarts. At 5 o'clock that evening, he knocked on Professor Umbridge's office door for what he sincerely hoped would be the final time, was told to enter and did so. The blank parchment lay ready for him on the lace-covered table, the pointed black quill beside it.
You know what to do, Mr. Potter?
Said Umbridge, smiling sweetly over him. Harry picked up the quill, glanced through the window. If he just shifted his chair an inch or so to the right. On the pretext of shifting himself closer to the table, he managed it. He now had a distant view of the Gryffindor Quidditch team soaring up and down the pitch, while half a dozen black figures stood at the foot of the three high goalposts, apparently waiting their turn to keep. It was impossible to tell which one was Ron at this distance. "I must not tell lies," Harry wrote. The cut in the back of his right hand opened and began to bleed afresh. "I must not tell lies." The cut dug deeper, stinging and smarting. "I must not tell lies." Blood trickled down his wrist. He chanced another glance out the window. Whoever was defending the goalpost now was doing a very poor job indeed. Katie Bell had scored twice in the few seconds Harry had dared to watch. Hoping very much that the keeper wasn't Ron, he dropped his eyes back to the parchment dotted with blood. "I must not tell lies. I must not tell lies." He looked up when he thought he could risk it, when he could hear the scratching of Umbridge's quill or the opening of a desk drawer. The third person to try out was pretty good. The fourth was terrible. The fifth dodged a bludger exceptionally well, but then fumbled an easy save. The sky was darkening so that Harry doubted he'd be able to watch the sixth and seventh people at all. "I must not tell lies. I must not tell lies." The parchment was now shining with drops of blood from the back of Harry's hand, which was searing with pain. When he looked up, night had fallen and the Quidditch patch was no longer visible. Surely they have lights by the Quidditch field, right? Otherwise, how are they practicing? Anyways. "Let's see if you've gotten the message yet, shall we?" said Umbridge's soft voice. Oh, I'm not doing her voice.
"Let's see if we've gotten the message yet, shall we?"
said Umbridge's soft voice half an hour later. She moved toward him, stretched out her short, be-ringed fingers for his arm. And then, as she took hold of him to examine the words now cut in the back in his skin, pain-seared, not across the back of his hand, but across the scar on his forehead. At the same time, he had a most peculiar sensation somewhere around his midriff. He wrenched his arm out of her grip and leapt to his feet, staring at her. She looked back at him, a smile stretching her wide, slack mouth.
Yes, it hurts, doesn't it?" she said softly.
He didn't answer. His heart was thumping very hard and fast. Was she talking about his hand, or did she know what he had just felt in his forehead?
"Well, I think I've made my point, Potter. You may go now."
He caught up his school bag and left the room as quickly as he could. "Stay calm," he told himself as he sprinted up the stairs. "Stay calm. It doesn't necessarily mean what you think it means." "Mimbulus Mimbletonia," he gasped at the fat lady, who swung forward once more. A roar of sound greeted him. Ron came running toward him, beaming all over his face and slopping butterbeer down his front from the goblet he was clutching. "Harry, I did it. I'm in. I'm keeper." "What? Oh, brilliant," said Harry, trying to smile naturally, while his heart continued to race and his hand throbbed and bled. "Have a butterbeer," Ron pressed a bottle onto him. "I can't believe it. Where's Hermione gone?" "She's there," said Fred, who was also swigging butterbeer, and pointed to an armchair by the fire. Hermione was dozing it, her drink tipped precariously in her hand. "Well, she said she was pleased when I told her," said Ron, looking slightly put out. "Let her sleep," said George hastily. It was a few moments before Harry noticed that several of the first years gathered around them bore mistakable signs of recent nosebleeds. "Come here, Ron, and see if Oliver's old robes fit you," called Katie. "We can take his name off and put yours on instead." As Ron moved away, Angelina came striding up to Harry. "Sorry I was a bit short with you earlier, Potter," she said abruptly. "It's stressful, this managing lark, you know. I'm starting to think I was a bit hard on Wood sometime." She was watching Ron over the rim of her goblet with a slight frown on her face. "Look, I know he's your best mate, but he's not fabulous," she said bluntly. "I think with a bit of training he'll be all right, though. He comes from a family of good Quidditch players. I'm banking on him turning out to have a bit more talent than he showed today, to be honest. Vicky Frobisher and Jeffrey Hooper both flew better this evening, but Hooper's a real whiner. He's always moaning about something or other. And Vicky's involved in all sorts of societies. She admitted herself that if training clashed with her charm club, she'd put charms first. Anyway, we're having a practice session at 2 o'clock tomorrow, so just make sure you're there this time. And do me a favor and help Ron as much as you can, okay?" He nodded, and Angelina strolled back to Alicia Spinett. Harry moved over next to Hermione, who woke with a jerk as he put down his bag. "Oh, Harry, it's you. Good about Ron, isn't it?" she said blearily. "I'm just so tired," she yawned. "I was up until 1 o'clock making more hats. They're disappearing like mad." And sure enough, now that he looked around, he saw that there were woolly hats concealed all around the room where unwary elves might accidentally pick them up. "Great," Harry said distractedly. If he did not tell someone soon, he would burst. "Listen, Hermione, I was just up in Umbridge's office, and she touched my arm." And Hermione listened closely. When Harry had finished, she said slowly, "You're worried that you know who's controlling her, like you controlled Quirrell?" Well, said Harry, dropping his voice, it's a possibility, isn't it? I suppose so, Hermione said, though sounding unconvinced, but I don't think he can be possessing her the way he possessed Quirrell. I mean, he's properly alive now, isn't he? He's got his own body, he wouldn't need to share someone else's. He could just have her under the Imperius curse, I suppose. Harry watched Fred George and Lee Jordan juggling empty butterbeer bottles for a moment, then Hermione said, But last year your scar hurt when nobody was touching you, and didn't Dumbledore say it had to do with what you know who was feeling at the time? I mean, maybe this hasn't got anything to do with Umbridge at all. Maybe it's just coincidence while you were with her. She's evil, said Harry flatly. Twisted. She's horrible, yes, but Harry, I think you ought to tell Dumbledore your scar hurt. It was the second time in 2 days he'd been advised to go to Dumbledore, and his answer to Hermione was just the same as his answer to Ron. I'm not bothering him with this. Like you just said, it's not a big deal. I've been hurting on and off all summer. It was just a bit worse tonight, that's all. Harry, I'm sure Dumbledore would want to be bothered by this. Yeah, said Harry before he could stop himself. That's the only bit of me Dumbledore cares about, isn't it? My scar.
Don't say that. It's not true.
I think I'll write and tell Sirius about it, see what he thinks. Harry, you can't just put something like that in a letter, said Hermione, looking alarmed. Don't you remember? Moody told us to be careful what we put in writing. We just can't guarantee owls aren't being intercepted anymore.
See, they should just use private key cryptography.
If Sirius had just given them their public key, he'd be okay.
All right, I won't tell him, said Harry irritably. He got to his feet.
I'm going to bed. Tell Ron for me, will you?
Oh, no, said Hermione, looking relieved. If you're going, that means I can go without being rude, too. I'm absolutely exhausted, and I want to make some more hats tomorrow.
She's so weird.
Listen, you can help me if you like. It's quite fun. I'm getting better. I can do patterns and baubles and all sorts of things.
Harry looked into her face, which was shining with glee, and tried to look as though he was vaguely tempted by this offer.
No, I don't think I will, thanks, he said. Not tomorrow. I've got loads of homework to do.
And he traipsed off to the boys' stairs, leaving her looking slightly disappointed behind him. And that's the end of chapter 13. And next we'll read chapter 14 called Percy and Padfoot.
I love you so much, kitten. You're an adorable kitten, boo. And I hope you have a good night and get some good sleep tonight because you're a wonderful kitten and you should be all well rested for tomorrow because you're adorable. I love you so much. Sleep well. Good night.